Hello, everybody. Guys, this Friday, June 23rd, I will be at an event in San Diego, the business side of dentistry. That's what the event is called. The business side of dentistry, your game plan for success. It's 6 CE credits. Breakfast and sign-in is at 8 to 9 a.m., and the course is from 9 to 4:30 p.m. Like I said, it's Friday, June 23rd, 2017. It's in Mission Bay, San Diego. The keynote speaker will be Doug Fettig. He's a CPA, MBA, Aldrich Dental CPAs. And the course will be presented by Debbie Seidel-Bitke from Dental Practice Solution. And I will be there doing some live podcasting. So come say what's up. Say hi. Mention the Dental Marketer podcast. Or you know what? Just email me. And I'm pretty sure I can get you guys in for free. But email me, okay, if you guys are interested. Anybody listening and wanting to bring their team to the business side of dentistry, I'm pretty sure I can get you in. So just email me. It's michael@thedentalmarketer.site. My email's in the show notes anyway, so just email me there. The course objectives are really to identify the critical building blocks of success, increase cash flow and future growth potential, simple and effective actions to ensure successful retirement, total health dentistry to keep patients returning, and then must have hygiene department systems. So you're going to be learning systems that you need to have in your hygiene department and your blueprint for practice growth and so much more. So guys, email me. I'm going to get you guys in. And yeah, so that's what I'll be doing this Friday, June 23rd. I'll see you guys there. All right, let's see what else we have going on. Blog post. Guys, I just put up a new post on the blog. Yep, we're not just a podcast. I also, actually, you know what? If you listen to the very first episodes, you'll see that I blogged way before I podcast. And then I was like, you know what? Let's speak about it instead and have people on the show. So yeah, but there's a new blog post up on the Dental Marketer blog. If you just go to the website, you can find it there. Literally less than 3 to 5 minutes of an article. It'll only take you 3 to 5 minutes to read, but it's how to market to your local post office. I'm going to read you a little bit. If you haven't tried marketing to your local post office, then you're missing out, okay? The post office is the second largest employer in the United States, according to the U.S. Postal Service website. Postal employees need dental care, and that's where you come in, guys. The post office offers huge potential if you're a dentist. This ground marketing tactic is literally ground marketing 101. It's simple to do and ingenious because no one is doing it. So if you've done the usual marketing techniques like social media and postcards, then you might be out of fresh ideas. So reaching out to companies is a great way to earn more business. Once you realize that government agencies are run by individuals, you can begin strategizing a campaign to bring employees in for teeth cleanings and so much more. So guys, go to the blog post and you're gonna see two techniques or tactics on what I personally use, and it works like a charm all the time, and how to get inside the dental post office, you know, talk to the employees, do lunch and learns, set up a booth in the employee room and talk to them. So go on the blog post. It's gonna be the first post that you see there, and then just read it. And if you guys want, you can keep reading and keep reading. Like I said, it's not a long article, so you're gonna see other articles of how to do ground marketing. And guys, this podcast episode is very, now I know I always say it's so important to listen to, and they all are important to listen to, but this one really will teach you a lot about how to increase your production, how to be more productive in your all-around dental practice, how to increase your collection, strategizing and implementing systems. We speak with Ragini Singla and Moki Goyal. Now, Ragini's the dentist, but the one who creates the systems and everything else, Moki's very, very smart in doing this. So they both work well together. They're both married. They're both a couple who run a very, very successful dental practice in New York City or New York. So yeah, guys, listen to this episode. It inspired me as far as with my clients, like it inspired me to implement some systems These guys are, they're killing it right now. They really are killing it. And like, I would really highly recommend, you know, listening to this episode with your team, your office manager, if you can, just to see how you guys can brainstorm together and take some ideas that they're using for their dental practice as well. Other than that, they've also come up with a system on how to start a successful dental practice from scratch. We'll talk a little bit more about that as well. And yeah, guys, that's about it for the intro. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to be a part of the Dental Marketer Tribe. Remember, the Dental Marketer Tribe is on Instagram. So go on Instagram, search for the Dental Marketer, and you'll see me there. And you know, just shoot me every time you follow. Just say, hey, what's up? And I'll say, hey, what's up back? And then if you're near the area, see what we can do. So yeah, guys, without further ado, let's see where Ragini and Moki are, what they're doing right now, and what their plans for the future are.
Sure, Michael. Well, first of all, we're so excited to be part of your podcast. We love it. I basically started out, I went to Temple Dental School and graduated in 2009. Mm-hmm. And I did a residency for a year in general practice at Sacred Heart Hospital in a small little town called Allentown. Mm-hmm. And worked in that area for about 3 years for a group practice, which was great. I had an awesome first boss, and he was really a mentor to me and taught me a lot and really built my confidence when I first got out. And after a while, I always really had the itch to start my own practice, so I knew eventually I would. It just didn't seem like the right time. I was single and I didn't know where I was going to live. So after Moki and I got married and we settled in New York City, I started looking for a practice. So initially I was working at a group practice in New York. And New York is a different kind of beast. So mm-hmm. It was really busy. There were 20 chairs and I saw a million people a day and really got a lot of hand skills, learned how to do things very quickly and accurately, but it was a high volume, heavily production-based practice, and it was a lot of pressure right out of the bat. So I really was itching at that point to get my own practice. So we started the search and tried to find what we were looking for. And then fast forward a long process and a difficult one. I finally bought my practice in 2014 on Central Park South, which is called Floss NYC, and have been there for about 3 years now.
Awesome, awesome. That's good to know. And then, Moki, what have you been up to lately? And tell us a little bit about your past, present, and future and how you got to where you are today.
So I've been involved in the tech space for a long time, both in terms of like website development as well as video production and combining the two. And so currently, well, initially I started out as a programmer and then I moved up and I now manage a team where we've built an online education platform for a company called Edulance. It's a really neat platform and it's a really great solution for online education. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that as we bought the practice and then rebranded it as Floss NYC, we learned a lot along the way, and Ragini and I were talking, and we realized, man, there's like so much information that we learned in such a short period of time. And even though we had done all the research and went to all the forums and all the boards to do all that research, you know, we were able to find all that information, but it was hard. You know, there's conflicting information. There's lots of like different perspectives. It's hard to know what the right answer was. So what we decided to do was we created an online course called Practice Blueprint. And basically what it does is it walks people through the process of searching for a practice to purchase and then financing it and then buying it.
Wow. So that pretty much takes over all the difficult process, which makes me wonder, Ragini, what was like the most difficult part of your process of starting Floss NYC?
You know, it's funny. I think that the hardest part is making your own brand. So when you're taking over a practice, the great thing about it is that you have revenue on day one. But the thing that's a challenge is I call it the babysitter effect. It's like leaving your kids home with the babysitter, and if they see you walk out the door, they're screaming and crying. But when you first take on this group of patients, they love that dentist that's leaving. And it's like the star is leaving the show and you're coming to take over. And you really need to make a niche for yourself and a name for yourself. Mm-hmm. And initially, in the first couple weeks, they're always kind of pining for the old dentist. So people would come in and they'd say, well, is Dr. So-and-so here? Is he going to do it? And, you know, it's funny, I found that to be the biggest challenge. But what was really interesting was meeting a patient for the first time who was really apprehensive about seeing me. I'm petite and people tend to think I'm a lot younger than I am. So a lot of these patients would think like, did you just graduate? What is going on? The dentist I took over for was older. And so, you know, they were really nervous about me doing anything on them. So I noticed like little tricks to help me get through those things. Like I would say, oh, I have a great plastic surgeon. If you want his card, I'll give it to you. Or, you know, the other doctor can't see you, but, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, we don't have to do your crown today. We can do it in 2 weeks, or we can just talk about it today. And, you know, when you start to say things like that, like there's no pressure about doing something now, and, you know, I don't want you to do something you don't feel comfortable doing, or if you're not comfortable seeing me, you can totally get a recommendation to see another dentist. It kind of disarms people and they're like, oh, no, I didn't mean you look like you're 12. I just was joking. Or I didn't mean that I didn't want you to do my crown. I'd be happy for you to do my crown. And so I found that to be a really good tactic when I first took over.
Mm-hmm. And like backtrack a little bit, when you said you had a really fantastic first boss, like he was like your mentor, what was the biggest takeaway from your first boss?
You know, I think that the thing I learned from him was that a lot of your apprehension is in your own head. So as dentists, we tend to be a very meticulous group of people who don't like to make mistakes or ever be wrong. Mm-hmm. And the most difficult part I found when I first graduated was treatment planning. So there are always questions about what to do in a case. And if you ask five dentists their opinion, you're going to get five different opinions. And so what I found is that he said, you kind of have to figure out what the way that you practice and how you are a dentist and what things that you agree with and what things you disagree with. So I can tell you how I practice, but you're going to have to forge that road on your own. And so it gave me confidence that there isn't like, it's not like a math problem that there's one right answer. It's what's right for you and what's right for your patient. And together you figure out the solution to the problem in front of you.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I know whenever I did math, it was always different answers all the time. So Moki and Ragini, how long have you guys been married for then?
It's been about 4 years. Actually, 4 years this month.
This month, yeah.
Oh, happy anniversary, guys.
Cool. Thank you.
Do you guys have anything big plan or
maybe?
Well, we just moved recently, so that was kind of a big
change.
Life change. Yeah, so
okay, if it's a surprise or anything, I don't want to ruin it, so never mind, forget about it.
No.
Okay,
you're putting Moki on the spot.
Yeah, Moki's like, Michael, it was a surprise. Sheesh, we talked about
we'll have a little chat later, Michael.
Maybe we'll do a podcast for our anniversary.
Yeah, okay, that would be really cool.
Yeah,
so Moki, how did your program come about then, the blueprint? What was like the thought process? What made you, what the practice blueprint, like what clicked in your head and said, you know what, let's do this?
Well, when we started, we asked a lot of other people that we knew, whether they were dentists or doctors who owned their own practices. We tried to get some advice from them to see, you know, what's involved, what do we have to, you know, look forward to and all that. And their advice was always encouraging, but it was always kind of vague. And you know, then we did a lot of research on the forums and we found lots of great information on, you know, places like Dental Town and others. But at the end of the day, the map of how to get from being an associate to being a dental practice owner is not super clear. So, you know, there's always individual challenges that you're going to face. And I'm not saying like, you know, Practice Blueprint is going to paint every little detail for you. Of course, everyone's going to have their own challenges, but what was missing for us when we first started was that general roadmap. Because as long as you can see what's coming, you can, you know, sort of be prepared. And I'll give you a specific example. You know, when we first started looking, we used a broker when we started looking for a practice. And the brokers, I mean, I'm talking from a New York perspective, where the New York brokers, New Jersey brokers, where we were looking, they tend to be somewhat very like shrewd. And so if you don't know exactly what you're looking for, how much you want to spend, what your production is, all these like metrics that they expect you to just, you know, rattle off, they kind of don't even want to talk to you.
Oh, wow.
Because you know, they work on commission. They want to make sure that you're serious. And, you know, I think there's a lot of tire kickers out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think what was frustrating for us was that, you know, we were totally serious. But, you know, they said, are you pre-approved? Are you this? Are you that? And, you know, we didn't necessarily have all those, you know, those chips in place. And that was the learning lesson for us. So we thought if we could at least let people know, hey, here's the steps you have to do, and here's the order you should probably do them in. And then, you know, we involved our accountant in the course. We involved our business attorney, as well as like Bank of America. They had a finance guy who was really great to work with. And, you know, there's a lot of things that like new dentists or even dentists who don't own their own practices, they're just not aware of. And so we just wanted to, you know, shed some light on that.
And do you think that's like mainly the biggest obstacle when a dentist kind of starts off their or wants to start off their practice but doesn't pull the trigger? Mainly it's because like, okay, where do I go with this, you know?
I think so. I mean, we've surveyed a lot of our users, and the highest rated issue is, number one, is not knowing what to do, and number two is fear of failure, which, as Ragini pointed out, you know, that's how dentists think. They are very meticulous, and they want to make sure that everything is, you know, they're gonna knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. But if you're uncertain about what you want to do, it completely leads to inaction. And that's, I think, the hardest part of getting into business ownership and dental practice ownership.
I agree. I think that what we found was when we started the process, as Moki said, we didn't know what we were doing. And then when we finally found the practice, a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, you bought a practice? That's amazing. But and then the second question was, how did you do it? So it kind of started organically because all of the people around us wanted that advice and we had just done it. So we were fresh off of the process. So, you know, I would say to them, okay, I can tell you exactly what to do. Call this person and that person. You need a dental specific attorney. No, don't ask your family attorney. And so we started out really organically by just helping our friends around us. And then slowly they would tell their friends, and then it kind of became this following that people would say, like, you need to talk to Ragini and Moki. They'll tell you exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. So then that's, I think, the moment where we realized we had something helpful.
And how long has Practice Blueprint been out for?
It's been out for about 2 years, but in various forms. You know, like Ragini was saying, it was kind of more homegrown for the first 6 to 8 months, and then we kind of released it out to small batches of people. By running ads, talking to our friends, just spreading the word wherever we could.
Gotcha. That's interesting. Really, really interesting. So what is one technique, tactic, strategy, or procedure that you have used or seen increase dental practices' profits?
I think that it's interesting when you buy a practice, there are obviously strategies and systems in place, which is great in some respect because you kind of don't have to start this from scratch. But in other respects, if they're not working well, you have to think a little bit critically and figure out what to do to change them. So, you know, we're lucky in the sense that we got a great practice, but there are a lot of things that with the staff we found to be inconsistent. So one of the major things that we focus on is patient experience. So what I find in talking to patients is that first and foremost, what's important to them is knowing that you care about them. And I think that in today's day and age, unfortunately, healthcare has gotten a little bit of a bad rap as being business oriented. And so patients, especially in New York City, can be very distrustful of what you say and, you know, think that you're kind of out to fleece them. And so what I noticed, especially taking over initially, is this sense of distrust. And so you really have to work hard to build that trust. And if you have an ego involved, it can be really difficult to bridge that gap. So, you know, if a patient's asking you a pointed question like, last time I came in, nobody checked these probing numbers that you're talking about, and today you're checking all of them, and you're saying I have periodontal disease and I need to get a deep cleaning. How come nobody told me this before? So as a dentist, that can take you aback a little bit. And you know, you might have three other people waiting for you, and you maybe don't want to have that conversation and get into it. Mm-hmm. But you kind of have to take a deep breath and say, this person's coming from an experience that clearly was negative for them. And it's my responsibility and my job to make them feel comfortable. So that was number one. And I would say number two is coming up with really consistent, measurable things to do on every single patient. So what happens is, I think we all kind of know what we're supposed to do, but you're busy. And like I said, there's four people waiting for you and somebody mm-hmm. else is on the phone. Another doctor wants a consult. And it's like, you know, really hard to do all of those steps on every single patient. But what we found is being consistent is key. When I do the same things on every single person that day, production just follows naturally. You don't even have to think about the numbers. It just happens.
So like by being consistent, do you mean like the treatment as well, or?
Yeah, I think that what I mean is more about the diagnosis process. So, you know, if I'm not probing, I don't really know if somebody needs scaling. So we make an effort to probe every single patient, a full mouth probing on every patient. And then you know exactly what category they fall into. You know exactly whether they need scaling and root planing, whether they need a rest in, and how to manage that patient moving forward. The second thing is, you know, Invisalign is a big part of our practice too. So we make an effort to also do very consistent bite exams. So, you know, Invisalign does such great marketing and a lot of patients consider it to be an aesthetic treatment. But mm-hmm. when you educate a patient on malocclusion and tell them the way your teeth fit together affects the rest of your mouth. So what we see over time is chipping and wearing of the teeth when they're not in the right positions. When you talk like that, a patient has a very different sense of what it is versus saying like, hey, have you heard of Invisalign? That's like a completely different path to having a conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Question, how do you sell Invisalign? Like, how do you educate the patient besides them, you know, saying like, hey, these are clear aligners that'll straighten your teeth. And then they're like, hey, you know what? My teeth are kind of fine already. How do you sell it?
So what we actually do is we have a specific bite exam that we came up with together. And it's nice that Moki's not a dentist in a lot of ways, but this one especially, that I can kind of use him as like, what does a layperson think about this? So, you know, we'll come up with these ways to convey the messages in a way that patients will understand what the problem is. So I'll use intraoral photographs are huge in our office. So we'll take at least three photos, one of each arch, so that they can see the crowding or spacing from a bird's eye view, and mm-hmm. then of the bite. And so I do a lot of showing instead of explaining. So what that means is we'll take the photos, and then when I come in for an exam, they're on the computer, and I'll show the patient what I see. So I'll say, I'm looking at your bite, and I see that the way these teeth are fitting together is traumatic. So they're hitting really hard. And then I also have another tool called Dental Patient Education. It's an app from, I think, iTunes. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of different videos that are just graphics that show abfractions, for example. So I'll pull up the abfraction video and I'll say, you know, look at your picture. You see these notches along the gum line, or, you know, like those little spots that can become a little sensitive. You can stick your fingernail into those. That's called abfraction. And the reason that happens is this. And then I show them the video of how the tooth flexes at the gum line. And then they start, once you see that, you can't unknow it. So now they know what's going on and they're like, oh, that's related to my bite. That's related to the way I chew. Mm-hmm. And I may not mention Invisalign for another 5 minutes. So typically what happens is I'll talk about these things and then eventually the patient will say, well, what do I do about that? How can I fix that? And then I'll say aligning the teeth is what will fix all these issues. When we see teeth in proper alignment, we don't have to fix the trauma. We don't have to do dentistry to mitigate the issues of malocclusion. And then I'll say clear aligners can help to move your teeth where they should be. So then the patient kind of gets it. They're like, so you mean I need braces? And then they have this panicked look in their face. And then I'll say, well, today we can do clear aligners. You don't have to get metal brackets. Have you heard of Invisalign? This is one method we can use.
And I can just say, like, from a non-dentist perspective, like, from a psychological point of view, if you are visually shown what's happening to your teeth and how, I don't even, you know all these words, malocclusion when your bite is wrong, how that impacts the other teeth and how, like, spaces between your teeth can cause decay and things like that. When you see those things, then as a patient, you feel in control, because then you're saying, well, now I understand what's happening. And then, you know, when you see the pictures of your own teeth, you say, oh, I understand what's happening. Now I want to make the decision to do something about it. So, like Ragini was saying, then they'll ask, what do I do about it? And when they start asking, what do I do about it? Well, now you have it's kind of like a bid from the patient for, hey, give me some solutions. And, you know, as a dentist, that's your job. So I think it's a really nice organic way to bring about treatment ideas for the patient that, you know, don't feel salesy on either side.
Yeah, that's true. And do you guys ever get patients who kind of say, like, oh, that's too much. I've heard of Invisalign, but that's too expensive.
We do. We get that all the time. So the third question is always, what does it cost? And then, you know, an audible gasp from the patient. But we always say, you know, this is another thing that a lot of people will tell you never to do, is talk about fees with the patient. But I actually find that patients trust me. And so if I talk about fees with them, it kind of builds a rapport, like you're in it together. Mm-hmm. And again, that's my experience. A lot of people would gasp knowing that I do that with patients. But, you know, I'll have a sheet that's very transparent that shows them exactly what the pricing is. And, you know, we always say we're flexible. You can pay in installments, divide it half and half or in thirds. We'll check your insurance and see if you have any sort of coverage. Also talk to HR and see if you have flex spending or health savings. And I always have a tagline that kind of helps ease it, is saying something like, we always like to take money from everyone except you. So let's gather all our resources, find out all the places we can gather money from that's not your pocket. And then they feel better.
Gotcha. I like that. We always like to take money from everyone except you.
Yeah.
And then we also have, like, you know, payment plans, in-office payment plans that we offer, things like that to kind of make it easier. Oh, and care credit and stuff. But one thing I think that kind of ties it all together, you know, all of these things that Ragini has been talking about are just part of a larger philosophy, which is this patient education and experience. So we actually wrote a patient experience guide. And so we had an office meeting a few weeks ago, and basically I wrote out what I expected as a patient that would be the optimum experience. You know, you walk in and you're greeted, and you're greeted with a smile by name, you know, things like that. And then we actually went point by point as the patient interacted with each and every staff member and what the experience should be.
And it's helpful when Moki's the patient and then says, I didn't find that experience to be very, very good.
I know.
But from that, we were able to determine, oh, okay, here are some things that we need to install, like whether it's forms or processes or, you know, getting each staff member to be able to describe what malocclusion is in the same language and same words, because we think consistent messaging is one of the most important things for the patient, because then they hear the same thing from every single person, from the hygienist to the dentist to the front desk person. All of a sudden it feels like, wow, this is, it's not only what I was told, but it's like the absolute truth, which is, you know, the case, which is the case. But you want to make the patient, it's all about perception.
Gotcha.
And patients can be, you know, skeptical at times.
Gotcha. Poor Moki. They use you as a guinea pig for so many
things. It's a
tough world. I know, it's a tough world. So what about you, Moki? What is, would it be like the same answer? What is one technique, tactic, strategy, or procedure that you have seen increase dental practice profits?
Well, I think this patient experience, coming up with this philosophy, is literally the most important thing, because from it, we were able to determine that, okay, to make the patient experience really, 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 you know, beyond anything that anyone's seen before, mm-hmm. we need to make sure that the messaging is the same for diagnosis. We have to have exam forms. We even use whiteboards when we talk to each other, so that there's no, so the patient never feels like they don't have your attention. So if Ragini's talking to a patient and she's needed in another room, instead of calling out, hey, we need you in room two, you know, we'll write it on a whiteboard, and then the patient never knows because their back is to the office, you know, the office member that's requesting that. And that kind of personal treatment really helps. And so, but all of these things require alignment and education, and all the staff has to be on the same page. So daily meetings, we do that every day. We do weekly performance reviews, monthly performance reviews. We talk about the production. We're very transparent with how we run the practice to the staff. This all funnels down to this final thing, which is what you're asking about, that one technique, mm-hmm. and it's patient experience. And so if you kind of align all these things, and you get the patient experience to be really superb, I think profits are automatic. And that's what we've seen, actually. We implemented this just a couple months ago, and immediately we're seeing results.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's good when you put systems in like that. And so what is one strategy, idea, or technique you would never do again, and why?
Well, we listen to a lot of podcasts, and we always like to take in a lot of information, and some people had suggested outsourcing billing. So we thought, you know, that might be good. We're a tiny office, and so we thought it would be a good way to kind of focus our efforts on treatment planning within the office. And it's a tedious job, so it may free up some time to do these other things that we wanted to do. But what we found was that it really just didn't work for us at all. And so we used a company, and I think a lot of the issues were maybe the company was green, but at the end of the day, the system for us just didn't work. And this was something that a lot of people recommended and found worked very well for their practices. So I think what I would say is you kind of have to apply everything to your own situation. So it's really great to go out there and look for advice and see what works for you, but then don't be scared to say this isn't working, and don't just blindly follow it and like double down on it. So, you know, we ended up dissolving the contract early, and the company actually said, yes, it's not working. But what we thought was funny is how long would it have taken for the company to come to us and say, this isn't working, versus us realizing this isn't working for us and maybe internally feeling like something we're doing is hindering the process, instead of like calling a spade and being like, it's time to move on.
Yeah, I think the thing to not be afraid of is to make a mistake, like make mistakes, in fact, because if every time you make a mistake, you're learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went out and tried outsourcing our billing. And we can honestly say for us, and this is for us, not for everyone, it did not work. But we can make that recommendation because we tried it. You know, for some practices, especially larger practices and, you know, people who own multiple practices, outsourcing may be the best way to go. But for us, in terms of knowing, you know, the billers just didn't know the patient that came in, they didn't know the situation. It was just very hard to communicate all of that. And so it didn't really work for us. So, but I think the biggest thing to do is try things. And we have tried so many things. Some things have worked really well and some things don't, but that's okay.
Gotcha. So make mistakes, man, Moki, that's the entrepreneurial spirit in you right there, where you make those mistakes. So would you say, Moki, too, that that's mainly the one thing or one technique you would recommend to never do again, and why? Or can you think of something else?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's it. Like, I think Ragini was kind of pointing more towards the specific situation that we had, which was outsourcing of billing. Mm-hmm. And for me, I would say it's don't be afraid to make mistakes. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and say, hey, I made a mistake, and admit it, and go back and do what you were doing before, because maybe that just worked better.
I think also there's so many great entrepreneurs out there, and it's easy to kind of trust somebody else more than you trust yourself. But part of being a successful entrepreneur is figuring out what works for you. And so it kind of goes back to what my mentor had told me originally is you have to figure out what dentist you're going to be. And, you know, you don't want to be the next great dentist who works down the street. You want to be the next great version of yourself. So trying to put yourself in the shoes of being the entrepreneur that you live up to is never going to be your true self. And I think what resonates the most with people is when you act like who you are and you act true to who you are. And people pick up on that, especially in New York. Like, I think everybody has a BS meter that's pretty strong. And, you know, if you're acting, you're going to get found out really soon. So you have to take on strategies that work for you. If you're not the type of person who's going to be comfortable having a financial conversation with a patient, it just like makes your skin crawl to talk about a payment plan, then you shouldn't do that. But if you're the type of person who, you know, can crack a joke about getting money from other places, all except from the patient's pocket, and like take it easy, then maybe that fits your personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Huh. And if we can backtrack a little bit, Moki mentioned the daily meetings. You guys have that, you know, obviously every single day. That's why they're called daily meetings. What are the bullet points? Like, what do they consist of? As far as, I guess, sometimes we don't know what to talk about on morning huddles, right? We just say like, okay, let's try and get as much money as we can today, guys. You know, but so what does the daily meetings consist of?
That's a great question. So, you know, initially we thought the same thing. People are like, you should do daily meetings. We're like, well, what do we talk about? Like what we had for breakfast. So what I found to be a really great strategy is to literally take the schedule for the next day. So I actually do my daily meetings a day in advance. And I am a horrible morning person. I need my coffee. I'm not good first thing in the morning. So when people say to come in and do your morning huddle, that like makes my skin crawl. I can't imagine talking to anybody first thing in the morning. So I do my meetings at the end of the day or the middle of the day. And what we usually do is kind of go over what happened that day. If there were any issues, if there were any flubs, if there was anything we could have done better and improve on, and then talk about the schedule for the next day. And so it kind of creates like a good tie-in of what's going on now. So I like to say past, present, future. So we'll talk about what happened yesterday or today, what is going on currently and how we want to fix it or change it, and then suggestions for how to improve it later on. And then using the schedule for the next day as a guideline. So I'll literally go through every single patient, talk about the patient, talk about, you know, any personal things that the patient might be going through. Like, for example, last time the patient was in, they told me that their mom died. So, you know, let's be cognizant and gentle with that patient when they come in. Or last time they came in, this patient was like, I never want to talk about Invisalign again. Do not bring it up. So having the whole office on the same page, I think, helps a lot. And going through each person gives every staff member an idea of where that person's coming from and their mindset. And sometimes you can't change somebody's mindset. So, you know, I'll write notes in someone's chart and say, do not discuss Invisalign ever again.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's interesting. And so you have the morning huddles or the meetings in the afternoon, you said, right?
Yes. So usually the end of the day. So after everyone's gone and we're kind of cleaning up, then I'll bring the staff together and we all talk about it.
Hmm. Interesting. That's good. That's good. But just to make sure, the point is to have those meetings, you know?
Yeah, I think the point is to have those meetings. And I also think that, you know, every office is different. So I like having them at the end of the day because I have examples of what to go over. Sometimes I found that when we had them in the morning, you forget what happened yesterday. You're kind of like a blank slate, and it's a nice perspective because you're charting out where you want to go. But when you do it at the end of the day, I like to kind of go over the things we could have done better or the things that were a little bit muddy and try to figure out how to fix those processes.
And from a management perspective, you know, I think it works really well that way because it's immediate feedback. And that's what always works best. You know, like she said, you know, you go home, you come in the next day, you kind of forgotten a little bit, you know, it's just more distant. It's more distant in your memory. Mm-hmm. And so by addressing it, you know, same day within like a couple of hours, you really kind of address the issues and you talk specifics and how to improve it. And it's also reiteration, right? Because by like saying the same thing over and over again daily, things start to sink in a little bit. And everyone is different. Everyone has a different level of reiteration needed to kind of like get the message. But this way you cover all your bases.
Gotcha. Okay. And so what is the best piece of advice you have ever received that can help my listeners simplify, accelerate, or completely change their practice in a positive way?
I think as a specific, probably the best thing I've done recently is get an iTero scanner. It has literally changed my life. But I would say the best piece of advice overall was what my original mentor had said to me, is just be true to yourself and know your vision. And I think that someone had said that if you treat, it sounds so corny, but it's so true. If you treat every patient like a family member that you love, not a family member you don't love, but a family member you love and care about, or any person you love and care about, it comes across. And when you're genuine and you really care about somebody, they trust you. And then all of these other things that, you know, we try to focus on as business owners, like profits, profit and loss statements, all these things become secondary. So I think it's really hard as a business owner to keep that perspective of what you do every day. It's the little things, like if you connect with a patient, it's hard to see how that turns into profit. But I find that when you do the right thing on every single person and you treat them well, the profits just follow. So we, knock on wood, thank God, up till now, we haven't had a time where we have been concerned about that. And so I really truly believe it's because we treat people well and we do the right thing, and that pays off in spades. And so it's not intuitive, or it wasn't intuitive to me, that as a business owner, you have to focus on the patient and the client, and then profits follow. So I think that was really good advice.
And so the iTero scanner, how has that changed your life? How are you using it right now?
It's amazing, because it's such a great tool for showing a patient a before and after. So the iTero scanner has a simulation, and oftentimes I'll scan. They had a statistic saying that 70% of patients you scan will actually accept a treatment of Invisalign. So I'll scan patients who aren't even interested just to show them. So I'll tell a patient, you know, I have great technology that can show you the things that I'm seeing. It can be hard for you to see your own teeth. I can scan your teeth and show you a 3D model of exactly what they look like and the issues that we're seeing. So we'll scan and show them. And I think it's really important to train your staff to scan, because originally we got it and I was like, this thing is really expensive. I don't want anyone touching it. So I was hoarding it with my, with everything in my body, and, you know, would be the only one who was allowed to touch the scanner. And finally my rep said, listen, you are working way too hard. You need to let other people play with the scanner, learn how to use it. And it's been such a huge help, because my assistant can scan and then I just waltz in and say, oh, hey, look at before and after. Let me show you these issues. And then the patient really gets it.
And it goes back to what we were saying before about, you know, really giving that visual. Because I can say as a patient, when I saw the before, and because we both have done Invisalign. Mm-hmm. And originally I was skeptical because I had braces for 6 years. I'm like, I'm not doing that again. But when I looked at the before and after, it really changes the way you look at it, because you can see where you could be. And then the decision is mine. The control goes back into my hands. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I want to do this. So I think it does make a huge difference.
Yeah, and it's great also for, I recently started using it to scan for crowns. So originally I used it a lot for Invisalign. Mm-hmm. I started using it recently for crowns, and you know, you save money. I'm probably saving about $25 per case. And they're amazing. I mean, they go right in. I haven't had to adjust a thing. I've only done a few, but I'm sure at some point I'll have to pick up my drill. But it's really been really amazing.
And I forgot to mention, from the patient perspective, there's no impression material.
Yeah.
I hated that stuff. It's just, you know, it's just really uncomfortable. There's a lot of gag reflex going on. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
Which is not for us too. It's not fun for the dentist.
I know, yeah. This poor Moki, he had to try all the impressions and
Yeah, I'm the guinea pig.
I know, yeah.
Try this one. It tastes like mint, Moki. I promise.
So, Moki, what about you? What is the best piece of advice you have ever received that can help my listeners simplify, accelerate, or completely change their practice in a positive way?
I think it's sort of similar to what Ragini was saying. It is a little bit corny, but from a more generalized perspective, it's like create a comprehensive vision for what you're looking for. You know, I've never believed in mission statements. I always thought they were like a bunch of nonsense. But it's funny, when you run your own business after a couple of years and you start wanting to accelerate your growth, you start to see that when you create goals that the whole company can follow, and in our case, like we were saying, it's, you know, the patient experience and maximizing that. Now every decision you make, should we get an iTero scanner? Should we create this form? Should we do this? Should we do that? That can easily be answered by your philosophy. You literally just look at your philosophy and you say, well, will it increase the patient experience in our case? And if the answer is yes, then we do it. It's not, you don't really have to think about it. And I think that automation of decision-making is what makes practices or businesses really succeed. Because a lot of the critical thinking of trying to figure out what to do, if you're doing it, you're for every decision you make, you're kind of building the wheel every time. And by having like a philosophy and a mission statement and like a plan that you're kind of working against, you save a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. It's in the back of the head every time you create something too. That's good.
Right. Yeah.
That's good. Alrighty, guys. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, tell us where it is we can find you.
Well, the practice you can find at flossnyc.com.
And the practice blueprint course is at flossnycpracticeblueprint.com. Couldn't be easier.
So real quick, just like, not like elevator pitch it, but like more, can you break down a little bit more in specifics of what practice blueprint does and will do?
Sure. It's basically for any dentist who's interested in practice ownership. We have a free portion of the practice blueprint, which is called our boot camp, and that basically walks you through some of the differences between being an owner and an associate, how to build your expertise quickly, and then some initial steps to really get started and, you know, hit the ground running. Then we offer the course for sale, which then walks you through every aspect of owning, of buying a practice. That's dealing with the brokers, getting the business attorney, setting up your company, getting your financing, doing your search, practice checklist. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on, and then eventually up to closing. So it just preps you for the entire process. And like we were saying, it provides a roadmap so that you can see what's coming, how to prepare, and, you know, what you're getting involved in.
Mm-hmm. Does it also help with kind of like finding the right location?
Yes. So we, you know, again, one of the things about location is that it really matters on where you are and what you want. And so it requires a lot of reflection mm-hmm. in terms of what you're looking for and where you want to live. And also the demographics of where you want to be, the dentist density in that area, a lot of things like that. You know, so you do have to do some research. And it's not like Practice Blueprint does all the work for you. You have to be committed to the process, but we just make it a little easier.
Gotcha.
It's what we wish we had when we were doing this process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
That was actually the goal.
Okay, gotcha, guys. Alrighty. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show, and we'll hear from you soon.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Such a great interview. So refreshing. That couple is so refreshing. Like, if I were to put it into an illustration, I feel like Ragini and Moki are a Long Island iced tea, and it's a super, super hot day in Texas. It's like super humid and hot, and they're that Long Island iced tea. They're that refreshing. Like, it's refreshing to hear their systems and what they know and how they implement it in their practice. I really like the fact that two things. I like the fact that their morning huddle is in the afternoon, right? Which is they adapted to what is productive for them. They didn't say, this is how it's always been done, morning huddles are supposed to be in the morning. No, they said, look, we're going to do it this way because this is how it works for us. Second thing, I like the fact that, because some of the clients I work with, we do sometimes yell like, hey doctor, patient's ready in room 3, hey doctor, patient's ready in room 1, right? But they like write it down, you know, on a whiteboard. I thought that was pretty cool. So I don't know. That's my takeaway. You guys let me know your takeaway. I actually took a lot more away, but I like, from the top of my head, that's what I can think of right now. Guys, don't forget about the blog post. Go read it. Go read it. It only take you like 3 to 5 minutes, honestly. 3 minutes or four. It's how to market to your local post office. Keep reading the blog post to find out how to launch an effective marketing campaign to your local post office to bring customers through your door. It's going to reveal two simple tactics that you can do. And if you still have questions after that, guys, email me. Don't be afraid to email me. Also, don't forget this Friday is the business side of dentistry. Your game plan for success. It's a 6-credit course. It's going to be Friday, June 23rd in 2017. It's going to be in Mission Bay, San Diego. To be specific, it's going to be in the Hilton San Diego Resort and Spa. Email me or email Debbie Bitkey and let her know, hey, you know what? I heard you on The Dental Marketer and he said he can get you in for free. Or if you're emailing me, just say, hey, me and my team want to go. How do we get in for free? Easy. I can get you guys in for free. Just mention The Dental Marketer podcast or you heard it here from Michael. And yeah, guys, I can totally do that for you. Just go in the show notes below and get the email address there, or my email address there. Like I said, the keynote speaker is going to be Doug Fettig, and the course is going to be taught by Debbie. She will really teach you systems that you can implement in your hygiene department and blueprints for practice growth. Guys, I can get you guys in for free, and it's only going to be beneficial for your practice. So let's do that. I want to see some of you guys there. Please. And don't forget, it's the business side of dentistry. It's this Friday, June 23rd. As always, guys, thank you so much for tuning in into the Dental Marketer Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please be sure to share and also subscribe and also leave a positive review on iTunes. If you listen on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, just leave a positive review. It helps the podcast out a lot. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, don't forget as well to follow me on Instagram. That's the Dental Marketer Tribe there. We all just kind of speak and I drop techniques, tips, and tactics on how to, you know, do successful ground marketing and increase your new patients' flow and things like that. So yeah, it's under the Dental Marketer in Instagram. And guys, I'll talk to you soon.